What are you going to do, stretches?
I don't know. I don't know what I'm doing right now.
In those shorts? Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, with those socks as well, man.
I know. These socks are crazy.
Yeah.
So are these shoes.
Yeah, they are. Nice job.
Thanks. Well, hey, welcome everybody to the third episode of Podcasts for Good. We continue to be on the air, so we're thankful for that.
Absolutely.
This week, we've decided to tackle yet another light issue, and that is civic and political engagement. I am Philip Kerrigan, the program manager of the Combined Fund Drive, and this is...
Heather Lucas, the fiscal and policy coordinator for the Combined Fund Drive.
Hey, you remembered your title this
I did.
Week. That's good news.
Yeah, I practiced.
Hey, yeah, that's right. In front of the mirror, like, I'm fiscal and policy, fiscal and policy.
I'm good enough. I'm smart enough. And doggone it, people like me.
Yeah. Well, I think people like us keep listening to us out there, folks.
Yeah.
And for the 9 subscribers we have, you guys are amazing. We really appreciate you actually listening to what we have to say. We're going to talk today about the notion of political and civic engagement. And part of the reason why we're going to do that today is because we just celebrated July 4th, which, of course, is one of the sort of benchmarks of civic and political engagement that has ever happened in the United States.
Yeah, just a little.
Yeah. We did okay that day.
Yeah, we did.
We drafted a document that allows for us to even engage in this conversation, to disagree with folks. It really is unique to the world, what happened on July 4th in 1776.
Yeah.
But we are going to talk even a little bit further than that. We're going to talk about how that kind of fits into the modern era, and we're going to talk to a gentleman named Emilio Garza. He is the executive director of Washington Bus, and it seems like this organization, more than anything, is a nonpartisan nonprofit that reaches out to especially younger folks to get them engaged in at least voting, but even get a little deeper than that and kind of engage themselves in a political process, regardless of their beliefs.
Yeah, and I do like the idea that they have the opportunity for people who are younger who don't know how to become, say, a council member or a mayor or a senator and just become politically involved.
Right.
How do you become a senator?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know? Right, exactly.
You don't just fall into it.
Yeah. Right. It's like it takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of engagement. And I think that it's going to be really cool to talk to him and kind of go over that. Let's talk a little bit about what the definition of sort of civic responsibility is. So according to Webster's Dictionary, civic means of relating to or belonging to a city, a citizen or citizenship, municipality or civil society. So basically where you live.
Yeah.
And then responsibility refers to the state of quality of being responsible for something for which one is responsible, such as a duty, obligation, or a burden. Burden.
No, I just laughed at duty. Because I'm 12.
Very, very mature.
Oh, God.
Very, very mature.
Yeah, I'm 12.
So, really, those two words combined basically mean you have a duty and an obligation to be responsible for where you live.
Yeah.
And I think that that is what civic and political engagement is all about. Exercising that duty, that obligation, that responsibility to your community, regardless of how you believe, the simple act of actually doing it, I think, ends up being the most important thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, Heather, why don't we go over some history about, number one, Independence Day, but then, which... I hope some people know that one.
Yeah, yeah, I would hope.
It's like fourth grade history. Actually,
yeah,
it's
but
like third grade history.
You know what? Third grade was a while ago.
Yeah, it was.
So,
true.
Yeah.
So remind us.
In June of 1776, a man called Richard Henry Lee of Virginia, he presented a resolution. Essentially, that was the start of us having a Declaration of Independence.
To the Continental Congress?
Yeah. Okay. So in the Pennsylvania State House, which is Independence Hall now.
Mm-hmm. Very famous.
Very famous, yes. So, his words resolved that these United Colonies are, and of right ought to be, free and independent states, that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British Crown, and that all political connection between them and the great state of Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved. So, that statement there. That's the impetus for drafting an official Declaration of Independence.
That is a very cool statement. I almost feel like there should be, like, orchestra music just when you said it.
I can add that, you know? Yeah, absolutely. Let's have some orchestra music in the background.
It's an amazing statement all by itself.
Yeah. So when he had the statement, within just a few days, they had a vote about this as a resolution. Mm-hmm. And of the 13 colonies, it was a 7-5 vote.
Wow.
New York abstained.
Wow.
And then on July 2nd, 12 colonies had finally come together and said, yes, this is what we're doing. We're declaring independence. And New York abstained again.
Wow. Really?
They're really big into abstaining. That wasn't the last time they did. So Thomas Jefferson, he was the person who wrote the Declaration of Independence.
Right.
And on July 2nd, they had discussions about it. The initial declaration that he wrote had to go through some drafts, and some minor changes were made, and it was not revised, completed until July 4th.
Okay.
And then it was officially adopted then.
Right.
And at that point, 9 colonies voted for it, 2 voted no. Delaware was undecided.
Mm.
And guess what New York did?
They abstained?
They abstained.
Wow. Answer for that, de Blasio.
Yeah, that's right. It's on you, buddy. Funny enough, John Adams, he was part of the Continental Congress at the time, and he became the second president of the United States. He believed that July 2nd is America's true Independence Day, okay, because it was drafted and proposed then, and for the rest of his life, he refused to have anything to do with July 4th celebrations.
Oh, man.
Stubborn.
He was a curmudgeon, that
fella. He was. I loved him. He's stubborn. And any invitations that he got to join in, like, July 4th celebrations or any kind of event, he'd turn them down because that's not the true Independence Day to John Adams. And then he up and dies 50 years later on July 4th.
Right? And didn't Jefferson die the same day?
Same day, exactly.
Same day, same year. Like, they died at the same time.
Yeah, so within hours of each other.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
History can be cool, people.
History can be cool. It's also funny when people have those little, like, problems or issues where they're just stuck up about it.
Wouldn't it be crazy if today there were presidents who were like, no, I don't see July 4th. I see July 2nd. You can celebrate whatever you want.
Exactly. But I'm having my celebration 2 days early.
I know, right?
Well, it is a federal holiday.
Mm-hmm.
So it has been since 1941.
Oh, okay.
So that is also part of the reason that it's a day that state employees and most people do get that day off.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Excellent. Awesome. So, Heather, let's talk an interesting topic. Let's talk favorite statesmen.
Okay.
People who were the ultimate politically... Let's try that again.
Okay.
People who were the ultimate civically and politically engaged individuals. Who's your favorite statesman?
Well, I have a little group that I love.
Oh, you have a group.
But I got one that tops them, okay? So.
Oh, wow. So you have subgroup B.
Yeah.
And then you have guy A. The LeBron. Michael.
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 Come on. What are we talking?
What are we
six
doing?
Six rings?
Oh, my
Hello.
Gosh. Yeah, what am I doing? Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry, Bulls fans.
So, I definitely have always loved John Adams and Thomas Jefferson.
Hmm.
I love me some FDR.
Uh-huh.
But Teddy Roosevelt.
Yeah.
Teddy Roosevelt's the man. There's a quote about, like, his personality.
Uh-huh.
He is a locomotive in human pants. Right? It's just crazy. Like, he was sick as a child, and then he found it within him to learn how to be who he became.
Yeah.
Like, he's a self-made man.
Mm-hmm.
Like, without a doubt. He said once, in any moment of decision, the best thing you can do is the right thing, the next best thing you can do is the wrong thing, and the worst thing you can do is nothing.
Oh, that's good.
So it's like, try.
Yeah.
Just try.
Just do something.
Because if you try, you could fail. Yeah. That's okay.
Right. What's that quote, 95% of life is showing up?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. He busted trusts, he preserved land. He was a heck of a statesman.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. When he died in 1919, and then Vice President, whose name was Russell, he said that death had to take Roosevelt sleeping, for if he had been awake, there would have been a fight.
Wow, that's
right?
Awesome. He's pretty awesome. And I probably would have stolen that answer from you.
Yeah.
First. Oh, if okay. I had gone first, that would have disappointed you, because I would have picked him.
Well, I still would have said everything I did.
Sure. So, I wouldn't have had quotes, so...
Yeah, suck it. That's what happens when you go first and you come prepared.
I know. Okay. Yeah. So I would say that... I guess my favorite sort of non-statesman is Martin Luther King.
Nice.
I think that he's somebody who did, I mean, it's undeniable, he's did some pretty amazing things, some pretty incredible quotes, and changed the course of history. Even his death changed the course of history.
Yeah.
I would probably say, aside from Teddy Roosevelt, my favorite statesman was probably Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really dig kind of everything that guy stood for. You're talking about a person who is responsible for actually starting a political party that still exists today. Yeah. Or he's one of the first Republicans ever elected, number one. The second thing is that you really looked at what he did in the face of so much adversity.
Yeah.
With the South seceding and trying to keep all that together. He did some controversial things, you know, suspending habeas corpus and stuff like that. But he was able to kind of not give in to the temptation of, like, you know, becoming a dictator.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, because at that point, America was really, really teetering.
Yeah.
And he could have really laid the law down.
Mm-hmm.
And he chose to be real smart about it. Also, George Washington was an incredible statesman because he left.
People wanted to retain him for his lifetime.
Right. He could have been King George Washington.
He could have.
If he really wanted to.
And I believe that his detractors called him King George.
Yeah.
So
I would assume so.
Yeah.
Right. But I mean, that's really amazing. You're talking about two individuals in Abraham Lincoln and George Washington who literally gave up power.
Yeah.
Knowing full well that in the future somebody who maybe wasn't as sort of virtuous as them would try to take that all back.
Yeah.
And that's what's so cool about American history, of course, right? Is that it's filled with people who were so self-deprecating and so visionary that they knew that if they held on to this power for too long, FDR, another amazing example, the first 100 days, the guy essentially shuts down everything and basically tries to, like, change the entire trajectory of the American economy and the American experience.
Yeah.
Had he been more selfish, he could have just basically said, you know, the hell with you, I'm gonna go ahead and keep all that power.
Yeah.
And that's why today, even if people are worried about, you know, sort of the sort of, like, bedrock of democracy and all that sort of stuff, we will always have folks who fight for it and folks who hopefully are virtuous and actually do that.
So, checks and balances.
Yeah, that's right. Checks and balances.
Yeah. As far as civics and American history, there are definitely some strange concepts out there. Okay. Like, you know what the Bill of Rights is?
Yeah, it's the first 10 amendments of the Constitution.
Yeah. There are Americans who don't know that, naturally, because there are. A poll by the American Council of Trustees and Alumni that was released in January of 2016, they did a poll, mostly about the Supreme Court.
Okay.
And the Supreme Court is one of the three branches of government.
Right.
10% of Americans believe Judge Judy sits on the Supreme Court.
Wow.
10%.
That's amazing.
Judge
One
Judy.
In ten.
She's on TV.
Yeah.
And she's sitting on the Supreme Court.
Wow.
Don't get it.
Wow.
38% of Americans can identify the three branches of government.
Oh.
So 62% cannot.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
28% of Americans believe that Supreme Court cases, once they're decided, they return to Congress. And Congress.
What was that percentage again?
28.
Wow.
That Congress will take a Supreme Court case and then reconsider it.
Wow.
Yeah. No, really? That doesn't happen.
Right.
Supreme Court, they're the final law.
Yeah.
25% of Americans favor eliminating the Supreme Court if they make too many unpopular decisions.
Wow. That's actually pretty amazing.
A quarter.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Right, and that really kind of does point to, I feel like that is something that we should attempt to rise above, because, you're never going to win 100% of the time.
Absolutely.
Your point of view. And if you do, you may not create the society that you thought you would.
Yeah, and you'd also be a very rare individual to have 100% of everything that you were going after politically to win.
Well, chances are you'd be a liar.
Yeah, you'd also
because nobody because I think I lost most of the elections or initiatives the first time I voted.
Right, yeah.
But you stick with it. The issues that are important to you are the ones that you're going to face.
Yeah,
that's a really interesting stat. I mean, it's hard to believe that there are folks who
would just want to get rid of the Supreme Court simply because they make unpopular decisions.
That's pretty unbelievable.
Yeah. 13% of Americans know the Constitution was signed in 1787. 55% believe that it was signed in 1776.
Yes.
But 1776 was the year Declaration of Independence was signed. So it did take time for us to actually establish
a constitution
for the law of the
land. Yeah, because we fought the British for a while.
Yeah, we had to do that first.
Yeah.
They had
to actually win.
They didn't like the whole, we're going to be independent.
They felt like that was the wrong way to go.
Yeah.
They disagreed.
They did.
With our assessment.
Yes.
Of where our country should be.
They did.
And they sent troops and all sorts of things.
Yeah, and we were like, well.
Well, agree to disagree.
So we're gonna fight.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it did take some time to actually establish a constitution. Yeah.
I know. I'm a history fan. So it's one of the most incredible things to see what happened in that time period in that era.
Yeah.
Because, history since and before is littered with populations rising up against colonial powers, getting their independence, and then unfortunately falling back into some sort of despotism or dictatorship.
Yeah.
Not sort of getting it all the way right. They got the freedom part right and the independence part right, and then they lost the freedom part as they were trying to formulate the new government.
Yeah.
Or they elect a strong man or whatever that essentially, basically in those infancy stages of a country, where it's so important to nail things and so important to get things right. So many countries, unfortunately, since even 1776, have sort of tripped over themselves a bit to try and get that correct. It is the absolute beauty of the American system. And I know that a lot of people, think of that as sort of Pollyannish or they don't view it that way. But we are still allowed to have the dialogues we have today, even as vitriolic as they are.
Yeah.
Because of the way the structure was set up in this country. It is really cool.
Yeah. One of the things that I love to hear people say is that our experiment in democracy is succeeding.
Yeah.
I was like, it's a 250-year experiment.
Right.
But, it's doing okay.
Yeah.
Of course, there are definitely areas where we need improvement.
Mm-hmm.
And, some of that is just simply the times have changed.
Yeah.
Not everybody has a horse and buggy anymore.
Right. Right, and I don't want to make it sound like by any means we're glossing over real legitimate issues. But one of the things that you've noticed over time in this country is that we have not always done things correct.
Yeah,
Our government even has let us down from time to time. The arc of justice, as Martin Luther King would call it, has been slow.
Yeah,
in a lot of cases, but you do see these instances throughout American history where, even though we got this thing wrong for a long period of time and lots of people had to suffer in order to make it right, this country has, through pain, through fighting, through all those sort of things, gotten those things right.
Yeah, definite persistence.
Yes, and I think it's really cool. Some of those sort of instances are the women's suffrage movement in the teens and the 20s of the 20th century.
Yeah.
You're talking about lots of women going out there and fighting as hard as they can on the front lines to even give themselves the right to vote.
Yeah.
It took far too long for this society to give women the right to vote.
Yeah.
But they did it, and I think that was one of those instances where you saw this country get something right.
Yeah.
Civil rights movement in the 1960s, of course, is littered with good and awful things that happened in that era. But we came out of the 60s, I would argue anyway, with a far better understanding of, the rights that needed to be bestowed on minorities and African Americans in particular.
Yeah.
Still something we fight today.
Oh, absolutely,
right?
Yeah.
And then, of course, we kind of talked about the LGBT movement. Now, that's a movement that actually most people think, well, geez, I blinked and all of a sudden everything had changed in terms of the views of the LGBT community. That community has been fighting for since the 80s.
Yeah, right. Even into the 70s, like the Stonewall riots. In the 70s.
Yeah. I mean, so it's something that it takes some time. Absolutely. It takes fighting, it takes powering through things, and it takes sacrifices by a lot of folks. Once it starts to get viewed as something that's right and just and all that sort of stuff, I think people fight through it. Yeah, it brings up a really interesting point, I think, which is what you and I talked about off air, which is, what does success look like?
Yeah.
Because success is not as black and white, I think, as people think.
Oh, no. There's no way that... And when it comes to civics and engagement and human rights, like, because essentially, yeah, people are fighting for human rights. Mm-hmm. It is not black and white, and it's messy, and it takes ages.
Yes. Right. And I think that that's something we also have to keep in mind. It never ends like 100% it went this way.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah,
yeah, and it's not like you start the fight, 2 weeks later you're done.
Yeah.
Yay, we have all the rights I ever wanted.
Right.
Nope.
Another really cool thing before we get to Emilio is Pew Research Center did a study a couple of years back. Well, not a couple of years. 2009 was the latest one they did. It was about the current state of civic engagement in America. And again, one of the things that I think kind of flew in the face for me of what I had seen, what I had thought of in the past, was they said that essentially 63% of Americans had engaged in some sort of civic or political activity of some kind.
Yes, yeah, so civic and political activity is not just running for office.
Right. So they narrowed it down to something as simple as signing a petition outside of, you know, the Target that you walked out of. Contacting a national, state, or local government official.
Nice.
Working with fellow citizens to solve a problem in your own community. Attending political meetings in a local town or school affair. Contributing money to a candidate. Being an active member of a group. Attending a political rally. Sending a letter to the editor of a newspaper.
Wow.
So there's all sorts of different ways to engage politically and civically in your community. And the other things they even talked about, some of the articles I read that talked about going even beyond politics. I mean, if you talk about civic engagement, most people think they stop short at the democracy portion.
Sure.
But even giving to charity, volunteering for charity, you are civically engaged in your community.
That is true.
Yeah. So, I mean, those are some pretty interesting points. Right now, we're going to dive into our interview with Emilio Garza. He is the executive director of Washington Bus. And their main goal, as we kind of talked about at the beginning of the podcast, is getting young people, in particular, civically and politically engaged in the process. So here's our interview with Emilio. So we're here with Emilio Garza from the Washington Bus, which is one of our member charities in the program. And he's going to talk to us a little bit about civic engagement. Emilio, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, doing well. Thanks for joining us on our podcast. You, by the way, are the first person who we've had call in. So this is an experiment for us, too.
Well, I'm hoping it works out. You know, apologies for not being able to make it down to the studio. But things are really going at a fast clip up here back home in our office in Seattle. So apologies for not making it, and really appreciate you having the option.
Yeah, of course. Absolutely. So can you give us a little history about Washington Bus?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Washington Bus, we are a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization that is dedicated to getting young people engaged civically. And so we've been around for about 10 years as an organization, and essentially what we do is we meet young people where they are, whether that's in schools or in workplaces or at music festivals, in the arts community, at other youth-based organizations, and we do a lot of voter registration because it's important for young people to get access to the ballot. And we do a lot of fun programming. We do a lot of leadership development. And essentially, what we're here to do is to develop the next generation of civic leaders here in our state.
Awesome. What are some of the bigger things that you do for the community? What are some of the things you guys take the most pride in?
So over the last 10 years, we registered over 52,000 voters, and that's definitely a point of pride for us. There's a funny narrative out there that young people don't really care about politics, and that's not our perspective. You know, the young people that come into our doors to volunteer and to engage with our programs, they care about things. They care about the issues that are happening on in their lives that are affecting them on a day-to-day basis. And what we've learned is that it's really about access. Historically, there have been so many different barriers to participation, not just for young people, but for people of color, for women, for poor people, those that are formerly incarcerated, historical laws on our books that have, you know, been used to disenfranchise these folks. There are a lot of current systems as well that, you know, we see as barriers to access. And so what we know out there is that voting is a habit. And so a lot of our work does focus on voter registration, doing get-out-the-vote phone calls to young people to make sure that they know when their ballot should have arrived, since Washington is an all-vote-by-mail state, how long they have to send in their ballot, and what's on the ballot. They can help themselves decide kind of which issues and candidates that they feel best represent their values.
Yeah, that's awesome. Have you found that voting seems to be the easiest way for someone to sort of become civically engaged?
I think it's a yes and no answer. You know, voting for us, we always say, is the first step in civic engagement. It's a really good first step. It's not the only way, and not and for some folks, it is a great way for them to, you know, be able to pick up on issues that are affecting them, hold candidates and issues accountable to whether or not they're actually improving their lives or, you know, reaching the outcomes that they were hoping for when they filled in the bubble on the ballot. But there are so many other ways to be civically engaged, whether it's volunteering at a local community club, being involved on some sort of issue-based council. There are so many different ways to get involved with your community, you know, based on age range, demographic, interest area, that voting is a really good way to really kick off that entire spectrum of the possibilities of what you can do to make your community a better place.
Did you work with Washington Bus when there were still counties that had the, like, go-in-person vote system, or have you been with them since we've had the entire vote-by-mail system?
I've been with them through the entire vote-by-mail system. I think the last opportunity to vote in person was in 2008 for the presidential election year, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think so. I think it was Pierce County.
Pierce County was the holdout, yeah.
They were the final one.
Actually, so that was the first year that I was able to vote as a first-time voter. So I actually cast my the one time I could in my entire life. Actually, growing up in Tacoma, went down to Mason Methodist Church and cast my ballot in person. And, you know, it's actually really kind of a fun idea to, you know, be standing in a line with your neighbors, you know, kind of talking a little bit about the issues and you know, making sure that, okay, before I step into this booth, that I have my stuff figured out. And that takes a while. And so actually, I missed the polls a little bit, but vote by mail is a really great system that does provide a lot of access and a lot of time for folks to really think over, you know, the issues that they care about, the candidates that they feel support their values. And but we're also a big proponent of you know, providing more access. As I mentioned, we're huge supporters of ballot drop boxes, and there is a bill that we were working on with a number of different partners to expand drop boxes across the state. So there will be coming up over the next couple of years or so, an expansion of 250 additional drop boxes. Because we've had polling places for so long that so many people associate the voting process as a place-based process, that they really look to get out of their house and, you know, go out, be civically engaged, and put that ballot somewhere, even if, you know, they get the ballot mailed to their house. And so we know that providing more ways to access for folks is always better, and, you know, we miss the polls. We like the drop boxes. The vote-by-mail system has its ups, and it could definitely be improved in a couple of different ways. But I think, the more options we provide for folks, the more likely they are to be civically engaged overall.
Yeah, we work for the Office of the Secretary of State, so we know all about the ins and outs of the mail versus polling. I do have to tell you, I kind of agree. I grew up in Steilacoom, which is in Pierce County, and I really kind of find myself a little wistful about, like, walking into the booth a little bit. But I know exactly why the mailing happens. I think that barriers get brought down and there's better chance at education.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think that putting a ballot in someone's mailbox and giving them the time to really mull it over a couple of days rather than having to kind of come in prepared and they have this process where they have to fill it all out within a certain amount of time and then that's it. You know, we've seen the success of the vote by mail system here in our state and in others, and definitely like it. And we've also seen the really fantastic success of drop boxes and people being really engaged with that process. And so, yeah, I think we're on a right path here in our state, and the drop boxes do a good job of creating that community feel for sure.
Yeah, yeah. The Pew Research Center did this state of civic engagement. Granted, it was some years ago. But some of the things, I was really surprised to see what are considered civic engagement. I always thought of civic engagement as like you go out to a political rally or you do something like that. But the reality is they consider things as simple as contacting local government officials or working with fellow citizens to solve problems in their own communities, attend political meetings at local and town halls and school affairs. I mean, is this where you see the majority of people civically engaged, or do you find that most people want to get out and do that sort of rallying and on the steps of the Capitol? What do you find to be some of what most people do?
Yeah, you know, I think in the last several months, the rallies have been a really popular place for folks to find their civic community and really make their voices heard. The biggest thing that I've learned coming out of those rallies that are extremely popular and I think, you know, do a good job of putting a certain message out there, our folks are asking us, you know, what's next? What do I continue to do? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think that's where a lot of those other activities that you mentioned, attending a neighborhood community meeting, you know, making phone calls to their elected officials, and I think more folks are starting to realize that their community that surrounds them has so many different levels of government that there's really kind of an endless amount of opportunities to engage. And so what we try to do here at the bus is meet young people where they are, find the things that they care about, and give them the tools and skills that they need to create that change that they want to see in their communities at whatever level that they're trying to go after, whether it be at the community council level, at city council, at state government, federal government. We know that if we give folks the certain skills to go out and rally their community members, that they will be so much better messengers to their neighbors, to their peers, to their family members and friends. And really that's kind of how our theory of change works, that, you know, we give them the tools to make sure that their communities have access. And I think the fascinating thing about the Pew thing is really peeling back the number of different access points there are besides just the rallies, which are fantastic as well.
Right, right, totally.
Yeah, why is civics engagement an important subject for youth?
So that's a really great question. You know, I think that civic engagement is really important for youth because if we don't engage them at a really young age, they won't have the opportunity to really take a stand on the things that are affecting them. I think that some of the issues that we are facing as a country for a long time have been because young people are not typically and historically engaged in campaigns or being reached out to and incorporated in local decision-making, being really a bastion and a base of knowledge for elected officials. It really becomes a self, fulfilling cycle of young people don't care about issues. How do we reach young people? They're unreachable. Mm-hmm. Therefore, young people, again, don't care, and therefore we won't dedicate the resources to go out and make sure young voices are heard. But, you know, there's been several, pretty big periods of time where when young people do come to the table, when young people, you know, do talk about how systems and government are affecting them in their daily lives, that we come to some really great decisions, you know, as a community at the local, state, or federal level. And I think it's, you know, for us, it's really important that we talk about the various ways of access that, you know, here at the bus, we're providing leadership development skills so folks can talk to their peers about the issues that, are affecting them. And knowing that, you know, because we live in a democracy, that if these issues are affecting you, you need to make your voice heard so that way that we can reach a better conclusion as a community. And I think that, you know, even older generations are doing themselves a disservice by thinking that young people may not care or are just too hard to reach. Democracy works better when you have a, you know, diversity of opinions around, and if we're not meaningfully engaging or meaningfully educating people about being civically involved, then, you know, we're not coming up with the best solutions as a country or as a state or as a city. You know, that's why it's really important to make sure that folks know that being involved in your community is a civic thing, it's a political thing, it's, you know, the way that you can really make a difference.
Let's take a break to talk about the LNI Golf Tournament. The volunteers at the Department of Labor and Industries are proud to partner with the Combined Fun Drive to bring you Tee Off for Kids, a golf tournament for the Boys and Girls Club of Thurston County. The golf tournament is scheduled for July 20th at 1 p.m. at the Capital City Golf Course. It's all a part of the CFD Golf Tour of 2017. We invite you to check the website for more details at www.cfd.wa.gov. And now back to the show. Yeah, you know, I find it interesting. You hit on it a little bit. I find it interesting because, you know, my dad's generation and my mom's generation come from this time, the 60s, where you might have called that one of the most civically engaged decades in the history of America even, but at least the 20th century. And young people on college campuses and places like that were really responsible in large part to like changing things. You know, I mean, things got changed because the young folks were engaged. I think it's interesting now how you fast forward a little bit of time and there almost seems to be this sort of like keeping the same aged people at this point, 18 to 24, almost like an arm's length away from the process.
Yeah.
I find that really interesting. Do you find that as well?
Every generation, I think, is different when it comes to youth engagement. I'm really proud of the young people of past generations really, you know, putting their foot down, and I think that speaks to some of the things that they were experiencing. That big history of civic engagement, you know, some of the civil rights era of the Vietnam War, the draft, and different things like that. These were things that were, you know, significantly affecting young people and, you know, feeling like they didn't, you know, even have any access at all.
Right.
They cared, and they didn't have access because,
right,
you know, you couldn't vote until you were 21. And so I think there became this, you know, there's obviously, you know, we had a huge push for the constitutional amendment to lower the voting age to 18. When we see that, when we push for additional access, that, young people do want to have a seat at the table. You know, for our current generation, there are barriers to access continuing, but they just kind of morph and evolve to fit the times. You know, there are various other states that have voting ID laws. You can use a military ID to vote, but you can't use your college ID to prove that you're a voter in certain states.
Right.
You know, students are having a hard time making ends meet because they're saddled with huge burdens of student debt, and so, you know, they're figuring out how they can get through college with as little debt as possible, and so many are working a lot more part-time jobs, and there's another barrier to access. And so that's why our model here is built around meeting people where they are, whether it be on campus, whether it be in the community, at the workplace. And we try to provide as many points of access for young people. We don't have to convince anyone to be civically engaged. I think young people of our generation are there. I think it just simply comes down to they just need that reminder. And older voters tend to get, you know, 6-7 different reminders every election cycle because they're super easy to reach.
Right.
They voted from the same address. You know, they live in a house with a really accessible porch and front door. They have the same phone number and landline that they've had for 10, 15, 20 years, and so they get contacted frequently. Young people change phone numbers, change addresses, move from apartment to apartment, move out of their parents' home, move to a new city, and so for us, we're just making sure that young people have that access, and I think that young people are finding their voice again in politics, and there was a lot of really strong youth engagement around the last presidential election, and so folks are hearing the voices of young people, and I think young people are really starting to shift the dialogue around huge things like student debt, healthcare, and a number of other different issues.
The argument and the rhetoric, that whole idea that I'm one person, my vote doesn't count, my vote doesn't matter. Do you find that's a hard argument to combat?
That is a hard argument to combat. It's especially hard for first-time voters where they cast a ballot and, you know, one or two elections that are on the ballot or one or two different races or issues, they don't turn out the way that really wanted them to.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is definitely hard. You know, what we continue to tell them is, you know, some of the things, issues, races that we've been involved in over the years have really come down to a handful of votes.
Sure.
You know, we talk about, you know, we weren't involved in this, but, you know, we always like to bring up the, I think it was the 2004 governor's race here in our state.
Yeah.
You know, went down to a recount. You have the opportunity to influence your community to significantly make a difference in any number of races across our state. And so it really just takes being involved, getting your community involved. And, you know, when we talk about how close some of these races are, you know, coming down to 300, 200, 100, or even, you know, here in the city of Seattle, a recent city council race came down to, I think, 32 votes.
Wow.
You know, folks are like, oh, I know 32 people.
Yeah, I have 32 friends.
So, yeah, it's a question that we get asked frequently. You're not going to win every time, and that's kind of the nature of politics, because folks are going to disagree, and that's what it's about. It's about coming to decisions, and folks win races and issues, you know, get on the ballot and they win, or sometimes they lose. But, you know, if you care about something and you go out and you talk to your neighbors about it, you really can make a difference.
Yeah.
At the city, at the state level.
I love that. Telling folks it's a marathon, not a sprint. If you believe in something, even if you lose a few times, it's, you know, keep fighting for it. That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Voting is definitely a habit. And so, you know, you got to be able to sometimes take the good with the bad and know that if I had my way 100% of the time in politics, that we wouldn't be doing it right, because, you know, I can look at, you know, anyone in my family or folks, even some of the folks that I work with here, you know, we tend to disagree on things. And so that's how you have to come about it. Yeah, that's how you have to approach it, is that we're going to work together even when we disagree.
Yeah.
What do you think social media's role has been in civic engagement? Have you found that it slanted towards doing mostly good for civic and political engagement, or has it been a hindrance, or has it been a little bit of both?
Yeah, social media is definitely a blessing and a curse in so many different ways.
In life, I think that's true, Emilio.
Yeah, I think especially civically. The one thing that social media is definitely doing is providing access for young people in a number of different demographics that have historically been disengaged.
Right.
So, you know, folks that we talk to say that they get most of their political news through YouTube, through Facebook and Twitter, you know, following hashtags, following trends. And so for us, it's important to make sure that we have an opportunity to engage in that space around that voting as a habit, that you can make a difference. The hard part about social media is that, you know, you don't run your social media through a fact checker.
Right.
And I think a lot of folks end up taking advantage of that and are able to create an entire kind of ideological bubble for themselves and for their followers, and to recruit folks into that can be pretty disconnected from reality at times.
Right.
And, you know, there are also a lot of folks out there that will tell their complete and own story that's in their own world, that has their own assumptions, that creates heroes and villains. Social media can sometimes allow folks to live just in that world.
Mm-hmm.
you know, and not connect with, you know, TV or print or radio, where there's a little bit more of this has to be on the level, so to speak, that this has to have some modicum of editorial board or verification that goes into getting in front of a lot of people's eyes.
Yeah.
So can you talk about donations for your organization? Like, what do donations do for Washington Bus?
I think the most important thing that donations do is they help us recruit more young leaders. They help us to develop and give and provide skills to young leaders to go out in their communities and create effective change around the issues that they care about. We have our internship programs, our fellowship programs, robust volunteer programs, providing for young people so that way, you know, a philosophy of, you know, we teach them and they go back and they teach their own communities about more ways to make a difference. The other thing that donations go to, of course, are making sure that we're doing our regular voter contacts as well, that we're able to go out and talk to more young people in more high schools and on more college campuses and more workplaces and more festivals to give them more additional points of access that older demographics tend to get pretty regularly from traditional campaigns.
Very nice.
So if, you know, if folks care about having young people at the table, having young people making sure that they're sending in their ballots, giving young people the skills that they need to be great civic leaders, the Washington Bus is a fantastic place for you to steward your donation dollars.
Awesome.
Yeah, we've got a couple of big events coming up for the summer. Candidate Survivor is the state's largest candidate forum. It'll be happening on Tuesday, July 11th at Numo's nightclub here in Seattle. The doors open at 7. It's a free ticket. We'll have 8 candidates out of the 21 that are running for Seattle mayor in this year's primary election.
Yeah.
And, you know, besides asking them critical policy questions, we'll also be kind of getting to know them as people. We'll be having them perform a talent that they have in their
wheelhouse. I like that.
Also, the audience will get to participate in determining a winner. We'll have 3 rounds, and candidates will be voted off after each round, and we'll declare a winner.
That's cool.
That's awesome.
It's also our 10-year anniversary, and so we'll be celebrating that with our annual summer event called Bus Bash, and you can go online to our website to buy some tickets. It'll be a free concert. We've got 3 amazing acts that'll be helping us celebrate, and that'll be on August 11th at the Vera Project here in Seattle as well.
Very nice.
Very cool. Very cool. Emilio, we really appreciate you coming on the podcast and sharing what your organization does for the community. And we really appreciate you taking the time to kind of inform everybody around this July 4th date on the power of civic engagement and what you guys do.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really nice to meet you, Philip and Heather. Thank you so much for having me on and getting a chance to talk about the Washington Bus. Be happy to come back on anytime.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
We'll talk to you soon.
Alrighty, have a good one.
All right, you too. So that was Emilio Garza, Executive Director of Washington Bus. We appreciate him coming on to the podcast. Heather, what did you kind of learn from talking with Emilio?
Well, it was more of what I didn't realize. Like, young people are definitely more mobile with going from high school to college or from going from their parents' home into the workforce.
Yes.
So they're kind of all over the place. There pretty much are no landlines in young folks' homes.
Yes.
So getting a hold of people, it's not really possible. It didn't occur to me until, like, I thought about my own experience. I have lived in an apartment building that has limited access.
Right.
And one time I did have somebody come to my door who was doing some kind of political something.
Right.
However, I did just stare at him through the peephole.
You didn't actually open the door.
No, no. I stepped in front of the door. And I stared at him until he went away.
Yeah.
And I'm sure he had to know I was there because, you know, that darkness comes
see
over.
The yeah, light. You can see just, there's movement
exactly,
over the thing. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I was like, I'm not opening the door for you, sir. I don't know you. This is weird. Go away.
There's this freakish lady in apartment A who just walks past her eye hole.
She's ignoring me. Why would she ever do that?
Well, That's
but awesome. Yeah, it is true. I mean, there are limited methods to get a hold of people now. Sure. You got to change it up.
Yeah.
You can't just go to every house on the block and expect an answer and expect somebody to engage with you.
Yeah, that kind of led me to, not something that I learned, but certainly a confirmation of what I have come to believe, and that is the role of social media.
Yeah.
In engagement. And how Emilio kind of talked about, certainly younger people, of course, get more engaged through social media and that sort of thing. But how much of a double-edged sword that can actually be.
Yeah, with like misinformation being put out there.
Yeah, and I think that that's, you hear an awful lot today with this dialogue about fake news and what is it and who is it and what who does what and who's saying that it is. To hear him kind of talk about how, while there are some advantages to social media, people know where to go, people know how to get activated and all those sort of things, we certainly should not take that as the one place we get all of our information.
Yeah, definitely having a diverse
information
coming in from all kinds of places.
Right, right. And so I think that was one thing that I really got out of it.
From this past presidential election, it's clear that young people aren't just slackers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we had three candidates, one of whom was propped up really heavily by people who were 18 to 30.
Right.
So, it is something that can't be ignored.
Yeah.
And maybe with elections happening in odd years where there's not a presidential election, it's not so big of a deal, but this past year, I mean, it was a big deal.
I also loved how the story, how he uses his rebuttal for people to say my vote doesn't count. Yeah. How he refers back to the 2004 gubernatorial election out here in Washington.
Yeah.
I'll be honest with you, I didn't ever think of it that way.
Yeah.
And that is such a real, like, perfect use of numbers.
Yeah.
You know, when somebody asks that question, you can say, well, if you look at 2000 in Florida, it was 300 some odd votes that changed the presidency. And if you look at the Washington gubernatorial race in 2004, it was 300 votes in one direction or another that changed the trajectory of that particular race. And you, of course, know of 300 people.
Oh, yeah, yeah, right? Absolutely.
And that was a really good sort of like picture of why you would continue to vote and why you would continue to get out there. And why, at the end of the day, even if it doesn't feel like it matters, it really does.
Yeah.
And he talked, too, about how hard it is to get people to vote the first time and lose on some of their issues.
Yeah, and then come back re-engage. To vote more in the future.
Because you feel like, well, what was the point?
You know, I lost. Yeah.
But to never really look at it as losing. To always look at it as, like, evolving, essentially, right? Like, I didn't win this time, or my guy didn't win this time, or my gal didn't win this time, and I'm going to keep going, and we're going to keep fighting. My issue is important to me. I thought that was really cool.
Nice.
So let's talk about some upcoming events. So on Saturday, we already talked a little bit about the L&I Golf Tournament. You heard that in the break. But we also have another golf tournament on August 5th. From the Department of Corrections. It supports Fair Start and the IF Project. It's at Eagles Pride Golf Course in DuPont. Then we have yet another golf tournament. It's the Golf for Veterans Tournament on September 16th that supports Homes for Our Troops. And that is also at Eagles Pride. They both are profoundly different tournaments for those who still want to go do that. We will also, at the end of August, be doing our football ticket online auction for those folks who are interested. And then, of course, on September 23rd, we'll have our Run CFD, which is down here in Olympia. Trainings are also coming up in August and September, so make sure you make it out to one of those. If you're a local coordinator that has subscribed to this podcast, thank you very much. And otherwise, we hope you had yourself a great Independence Day and celebrated on July 4th. The way America is supposed to, John Adams.
Yeah, none of this July 2nd stuff. Come on, buddy.
Anyway, thank you very much for tuning into this week's podcast for good. We will see you soon.